Welcome to an Eastern Standard special series produced by Dynamics Productions and WEKU, Democracy Optimist, with Professor Joshua Douglas of the University of Kentucky Rosenberg College of Law and author of The Court Versus the Voters, The Troubling Story of How the Supreme Court Has Undermined Voting Rights, publishing in May. Throughout the 2024 election season, considered by many to be the most consequential of a lifetime, we'll be bringing you conversations with election and voting experts from across the political spectrum so that when you go to the polls on November 5th, you'll arrive fully informed about how it all works to keep our democracy alive and well. Missed an episode? No problem. You can find a growing list of episodes online at esweku.org. Just click on the Democracy Optimist tab. So let's dive right in. Here's Josh Douglas.
Welcome to Democracy Optimist, where we bring you the good, the bad, and the ugly on voting rights and election law with a dose of hope sprinkled in. Today, we are speaking with Secretary Jocelyn Benson, the Michigan Secretary of State. She's in charge of elections in this critical swing state. She was once a law professor of voting rights as well as a law school dean, and she quite literally wrote the book on the vital role of secretaries of state before becoming one. Secretary Benson, welcome to Democracy Optimist.
Thanks for having me.
So you were the Secretary of State during the 2020 election, a pretty controversial time, and you were quite busy, obviously. What was the most challenging part of being the head election official in Michigan in 2020?
I think the most challenging part was to really stand at the forefront of seeing all the misinformation and the manipulation and the lies that were part of the strategy to retain political power and in some cases raise money and, create celebrity for some people as they try to gain that and sort of become renowned figures by challenging the election results. But it's really both heartbreaking, but also a reminder of what the anti-democracy playbook is. And we've seen it in various different forms throughout our country's history, and it's never fully gone away. And it manifested itself quite poignantly in 2020 through the misinformation and lies that then transformed into threats and harassment and people showing up outside my home, outside counting boards where people were counting votes in Detroit, people showing up outside our state capitol. And of course, the tragedy, it all culminated in the tragedy at our U.S. Capitol on January 6th.
Yeah. And so do you think as you're preparing, things are going to get better or things are going to get worse?
We have a number of adages on our team. One of them is hope for the best and plan for every contingency. So we just remind ourselves of that. Another one is try to take a challenge and make it an opportunity and never lose the opportunity that a crisis provides to really create some good change. And so we look at everything through that lens. How do we use what we're enduring to make us stronger, to make our democracy stronger? And how do we plan for every possible contingency in 24, knowing that we've already seen the tactics that folks have been willing to deploy in 2020, and that we need to expect that they'll be revisited again, perhaps with new seasons and flavoring, but certainly, with the same goal of if someone doesn't like the election results in this particular election, trying to block them from coming to fruition.
Yeah, I mean, I often tell people that just because you lost an election doesn't mean the election was illegitimate. The right response to losing an election is to fight for the next one and try to convince the voters of your cause. One of the points of this show is to explain to everyday voters how elections actually work. So let's dive into that a little bit. What is Election Day itself for the early voting period and then, the Tuesday in November? What does it actually look like for you?
Well, obviously, there's a whole bunch of stuff, months of preparation that goes into play. But on election day itself, the morning begins with, we sort of track it based on, what could go wrong and what is happening and what's their inflection point. The beginning is the opening of the polling places all throughout the state. The opening bell rings and we hope everyone's in their places. We have actually contingency plans of 100 people on standby if people don't show up to polling places so that we can make sure every place opens on on time, and we continue to push for that goal and have met it in the past several cycles. And then the morning is usually a little slow. I'll visit a number of sites and talk with people. And after that first rush, things can sort of hit a bit of a lull until maybe the afternoon. We'll see more people coming in at lunch. And for me, I'm going around the state all day, hitting different media markets, visiting different precincts and polling sites, talking to election workers, seeing how things are. And every 2 hours, my team is meeting with media to let them know what they're seeing and help provide content, good stories of all the positive things that are happening, and respond to any misinformation or questions that may have emerged in the sort of that recent span of time. And then on the opposing hours, so on even hours, we're having conversations with the media. On odd hours, we're having conversations with folks in the field, grassroots organization, League of Women Voters, others who are nonpartisan but have an interest in making sure democracy goes smoothly. The 188 Your Vote group, our vote, you know, that gets a lot of hotline calls, and we check in with them to see what they're hearing and respond to things they may have questions about. So it's constant stream of communication. And then the other layer we have on top of all that, in addition to my visits, in addition to those calls, is a field team in place all throughout the state, so that at any given point, we have someone who is connected to my team within 5 to 10 minutes of any polling site. So if we hear of anything or something pops on social media, we can physically get there to see what needs to happen and work with the clerks and poll workers on the ground to either address something or dispel a myth that may have been getting out of control.
So you literally have people throughout the entire state within, you said, mm-hmm. 5 or 10 minutes of every polling site to be able to get to the place right away if it sounds like there's something going on, or if there's, you know, rumors about what's happening. Obviously, a lot of logistics involved in that. So let's talk about the myth-busting role of your job, which, you know, maybe wasn't something you thought was going to be part of the job when you ran. What's the biggest myth that many people believe about how our elections operate, and how do you combat that misinformation?
I think the biggest myth is the lack of transparency, and we combat it with more transparency. We have become even more transparent, holding open town halls. Our local clerks have always done testing of election equipment before every election, but we're making sure everyone knows about that. Post-election audits have also been something that we have prioritized and really amplified in a sort of exponential way over the last few years, so that there's as much sunlight on the process as well. And we welcome the questions posed in good faith of people saying, you know, why did this happen? Or why are you only allowed to have, you know, one person from each party observing a particular polling site, or different things like that? We welcome those questions and we counter any misinformation with the truth. But, you know, the biggest challenge is that it's oftentimes these aspersions that something's going on behind closed doors, that some decision is being made or votes are being counted in the absence of sunlight. When in reality, we have, you know, full sunlight on everything we do, but it really underscores our need as officials, public officials, election officials, to be as transparent as possible in the work that we do to help restore and ensure people have faith in the process.
That's great. That's kind of the point of this whole, you know, radio segment as well, right? Casting a light, shining a light on the way our elections operate so people believe in democracy and believe that democracy can be sustained in 2024 despite all of the challenges that we face. Mm-hmm. And one of the ways that I think Michigan is doing that is through a bunch of pro-voter laws that were passed and signed into law over the past year. Walk us through some of the changes to Michigan election law, and especially those that will help voters.
Well, we've had two rounds of ballot initiatives in 2018 and in 2022 that collectively have really transformed democracy in our state, amending our state constitution to, among other things, implement automatic voter registration, implement same-day or election-day registration, create expanded no-reason absentee voting for every citizen, and most recently create 9 days of early voting all across our state in every statewide election. So these have been really transformative in our state, but they've all been voter-driven, which makes them all the more stronger and more powerful to implement and to teach voters about, because many of them have weighed in on these policies, said they wanted them, and now we get to bring that to fruition on their behalf. And then in addition to that, the legislature, particularly over this last year, has enacted a whole slew of election policies that have really helped us get closer to achieving our goal of really ensuring the access and the security of the process. and being a leader in that nationwide. Among other things, we made it a crime. It's now a crime to threaten or harass election workers while on the job. We have expanded regulation of artificial intelligence in election engineering communication, requiring disclosure of the use of artificial intelligence by candidates or campaigns, and banning the use of artificial intelligence to deceive voters. We have made it legal to give rides to the polls. Previously, it was not. We have implemented pre-registration for 16 and 17-year-olds, so now they can pre-register and become registered automatically once they're turn 18. And we've also strengthened the laws to ensure canvassers certify election results efficiently and effectively in the post-election process. All of that has been in many ways reaction to both the ballot initiatives that citizens have enacted and the challenges that we faced over the last several years. And it's been great to see lawmakers come together and voters and really push for these changes and make them part of our laws.
And many of those changes, you know, they sound like pro-voter initiatives to make it easier to participate, but they're also sort of security measures in disguise, aren't they? Like, can you talk a little bit about how something like expanding early voting or some of the other laws you mentioned Michigan's passing hit the dual goals of access and integrity?
Yeah, that's such a great question, because so often we see these things framed as one or the other, when in reality, both good election administration and good election policy does both. It both expands access to the vote and ensures the security of the process. And a great example of that is automatic voter registration. The data shows that is one of the most significant changes or policy changes you can make to expand the number of eligible citizens who are registered to vote in any election. And at the same time, what we've seen in Michigan implementing automatic voter registration is that it also increases the accuracy of our voter rolls, because people are removed or their addresses are updated automatically if they are no longer eligible, or if they're not eligible at a previous address. So every time, for example, someone in our state renews a driver's license or interacts with my office, we essentially check their voter registration status, registering them if they're not registered, but affirming its accuracy if they're already registered. And that's, again, really helped us increase the accuracy and security of our voter rolls, which we know is of great importance for many people.
So if the Michigan legislature said, Secretary Benson, we will enact one election law of your choice, you get to decide one thing that we will promise to enact and the governor will sign to change Michigan elections, what law would that be?
We want to see a Michigan Voting Rights Act enacted in our state. This would expand and enhance the protections of the Federal Voting Rights Act, which is, you know quite well, have really been weakened over the last several years and stand to be weakened even more, given some cases that may get to the Supreme Court. And it's just under repeated attack. And so we believe every state needs to pass its own voting rights law to protect voters from intimidation and really accomplish a lot of the same goals of the federal law. Given the federal law's weakness and our opportunity in our states to create a strong protection.
And Nevada has one already, if you're looking among some other states, but Nevada had a Voting Rights Act, which was now part of the state constitution. The voters mm-hmm. enacted the change in the law was just to make what was statute now a part of their founding document. So there's some precedent for that, as well as some other voting rights acts around the country. So you are an elected official, and the nature of running for Secretary of State in Michigan is that it's a partisan race. So as an elected Democrat, how do you maintain nonpartisanship in the role of administering the state's elections?
Well, I often say democracy is a team sport, and secretaries of state play on that team as the referees, the nonpartisan referees who are obligated to facilitate free, fair, and accurate elections, and to educate and inform voters. As I wrote an entire book on how the role of a secretary of state is best performed when it's professional, when it's nonpartisan, and when it's transparent. And all the different ways in which we can do that really give rise to our ability to give people's faith in our elections and our ability as referees to guide them. And I'll say, as a sort of the other side of that is, what I found when I wrote my book on the office, interviewing every secretary of state in the country at the time, back in 2007 and 2008, was that no matter what format in which a secretary becomes their secretary, whether they're appointed or elected, really it all comes down, or even what party they're affiliated with, Democrat or Republican, just all comes down to the person. And it all comes down to whether the person serving in this role, regardless of how they get there or what party they're affiliated with, is truly dedicated to being a referee of elections and advancing things from a perspective of what's best for voters, not what's best for their party, or not what's best for any interest group they may represent. And it's been heartbreaking to see how many of my colleagues on both sides of the aisle, particularly since 2020, in part, I would argue, because they want to be famous or they want to raise money or they want to run for another office, have abdicated their role as referees and instead chosen to be politicians instead. It's made it harder for the rest of us to do our jobs. But, you know, our goal is to set ourselves apart from those who decide to use their roles in partisan ways and instead demonstrate to the country that we can be nonpartisan, non-political referees of our elections. And indeed, that's what the job requires.
Yeah, I often point to you on the Democratic side and my Secretary of State in Kentucky, Michael Adams, who's also interviewing for this as someone on people on both sides who are doing that, you know, referee role. So I thank you for that. Are you optimistic about voting in elections with all the doom and gloom out there? Are you an optimist?
I am. You know, like you, those of us who've been doing this work for a number of decades, we have seen a real growth in attention on this work over the last couple of years. And that's been something that has really helped us become even stronger as a community. We see more people paying attention to democracy than ever before, more people participating in the process, certainly in Michigan and in other states, and more attention on the types of policies that actually yield the results we want, which are more accessible and more secure elections. So, you know, the story of democracy over the last several years has been one of great challenge, but it's also, if you read between the lines, it's been one of great growth. We've had high turnout. We've had more engagement than ever before. We have more people volunteering to be poll workers than ever before. And so all of that makes me feel that we can actually emerge from this moment with a healthier, more robust democracy than ever before, because more people are recognizing our role as Americans in protecting that democracy and how it will wither on the vine if we don't embrace that responsibility that we all have. I see more people embracing that responsibility than ever before. And despite, again, the challenges that have emerged as a result of the misinformation and politicians' actions over the last several years, the actions of citizens have been incredibly inspiring, as so many have stood in defense of our democracy and have gotten more involved, either as voters or as election workers or anything in between. And that gives me a lot of faith we're going to emerge from this with a healthier democracy than we did going into it.
So what's the one thing listeners can do to support civic engagement in democracy?
Yeah, I'll give you two things. I mean, one, certainly we need all citizens to be critical consumers of information. Fact check any information you have with nonpartisan sources. In Michigan, we have established a fact check website, michigan.gov/SOSFactCheck. We also encourage people to develop multiple sources of information and speak with trusted voices in your community and election officials when you have questions about your elections. And the second thing people should do is step up and serve as an election worker. There's no better way to see firsthand how secure and transparent our elections actually are than by serving as an election worker. And you get to fulfill your civic duty, help others vote and participate. It's really inspiring, if not long hours, but it's a great way to become an expert yourself in secure elections and do your part in helping to support democracy.
Jocelyn Benslin, Michigan Secretary of State, thank you so much for joining Democracy Optimist. This is a great conversation.
Thanks for having me. Good to see you.
This is Tom Martin. I'm here with Democracy Optimist host Josh Douglas. Josh, your expertise is in election law and voting. You're an election law and voting research professor at the University of Kentucky. So if you would give us the election law of the day.
You know, Tom, I'm always looking for positive news from states in ways in which we are making it easier to participate, easier to vote, breaking down barriers. And so today's election law of the day, I think I have to echo Secretary Benson with respect to Michigan's various voter reforms. You know, it was already beginning to become an innovator in creating an independent redistricting commission from the ground up, something we can talk about in just a minute. And over the past year, it's enacted a handful of new Michigan laws to ease voter registration, make it easier for people to get on the rolls, require 9 days of early voting, which is going to ease pressure on Election Day, especially when we saw so many long lines on Election Day previously. And then this last one, I think, is, you know, kind of technical, but really crucial. It passed a law to allow voters to fix clerical errors on their ballots. So you have a mail-in ballot, an absentee ballot. Perhaps you forgot to put the zip code on the outside envelope. The county clerks now will have to let you know that there's a clerical error and let you fix that mistake. You know, that's going to lead to much less disenfranchisement, many fewer votes being thrown out because the voter didn't follow the technical requirements. So those sorts of rules are not the most headline grabbing, but I think they'll have a tangible impact on voters.
You know, it's always good to have a good nugget of information in your hip pocket that you can pull out when you're in a conversation with somebody about the election. What sort of fun election fact can you share with us?
So in 2016, right after the election, a young woman in Michigan named Katie Fahey posted on Facebook, and she was sort of disillusioned about the election results. She was afraid of going to Thanksgiving dinner that year because, you know, many of her family members were staunch Donald Trump supporters, but other people in her family were big Bernie Sanders fans. And she was like, I don't know how I can handle Thanksgiving dinner. So she posted on Facebook and said, you know, hey, I'm thinking of taking on redistricting in Michigan. Anyone want to join in? And she sort of thought, okay, what's one issue that both sides hate, you know, except for the people in charge who are drawing the maps? You know, people from both ends and all ends of the political spectrum don't think it's fair when maps are rigged. So she put this on Facebook, expected a few people would respond and they'd go find an organization to help. Instead, the post blew up. People kept contacting her and saying, yes, I'm in. What do I do? And she was like, well, all these people are contacting me. So she ended up starting an organization, Voters Not Politicians, based on all of the people who contacted her. And they fought to put a constitutional amendment on the ballot in Michigan in 2018 to create an independent redistricting commission. And they won. And so this election cycle, Michigan's going to be have elections with much fairer maps. Now, the map that the commission adopted is actually in litigation still, so we don't have a final outcome, but it's certainly a lot more fair than the entrenched politicians drawing the map. And as Katie told me, we basically overthrew the government. Now, peacefully, right? They did it at the ballot box by taking the power to draw maps away from the politicians and put it in the hands of this independent commission.
Well, what Katie did inspires this next question. And, you know, we're all so busy with our day-to-day. What is that one thing that each of us can do to support democracy?
So I recommend checking out the organization that Katie's Facebook post generated. It's called Voters Not Politicians. What a great name, right? Because it encapsulates what the whole point of this is, which is that our government is run by the voters, is the voters have primacy in our government, not the politicians who might be passing laws just to keep themselves in power. They were behind the push for an independent redistricting commission. They've also been behind the push for lots of other reforms in Michigan's election laws. And one thing I love about this organization is that it is truly nonpartisan. They have people from all walks of life, all political persuasions, all involved in the project of making our democracy stronger.
Thanks for joining us for Democracy Optimist, a special Eastern Standard series produced by Dynamics Productions and WEKU. Joshua Douglas, our writer and host, Mike Savage, executive producer, me, Tom Martin, producer, Neil Kesterson, technical director and sound designer. Special appreciation to Madeline Peru for our theme music, American. Mason Graber, research assistant, Caitlin Douglas, graphic designer, Ella Fitzgeraldine, studio dog. This series is online at democracyoptimist.com, and podcast versions are available wherever you get podcasts. Want to get in touch? Our email is democracyoptimist@gmail.com. I'm Tom Martin. Thanks for listening to Democracy Optimist from Eastern Standard and WEKU.